Aloha, this is Catherine Cruz. Thanks for joining us here on The Conversation, Hawaii Talks. The Hawaii Tourism Authority is at a turning point. It's undergone massive changes in recent months, including the resignation of its entire board and added oversight following a scathing state audit. Hard to keep up with all the changes, so for today's show, we take a look back at our recent interviews about the past, present, and future of the HTA. We bring a reaction from the former chair of the board on the day of his resignation. We pause to consider the origins of the Hawaii Tourism Authority. We hear from the director of the department that HTA now lives under. And we check in with an industry leader with ideas about the new advisory board.
I'm Anita Rao. People with disabilities are often excluded from conversations about parenting. So one inner-abled couple built their own playbook.
The way I was going about the days wasn't like the way I had seen parenting pictured. It was the way I could do it.
A conversation about disability and parenting. Next time on Embodied.
Beginning this evening at 7, following Bite Marks Cafe.
We often advise people to follow their dreams. But what happens when that strategy doesn't work?
I had a hard time to motivate myself to do more. Like, I would stare at my computer screen in my cubicle, and I just would ask myself what the heck I'm doing.
How to respond when you stop loving your passions, this week on Hidden Brain from NPR.
Beginning Sunday morning at 11.
Tuned to The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Catherine Cruz. Today's show highlights major events at the Hawaii Tourism Authority. HTA has come under fire in recent months for procurement violations and failing to pay its vendors in a timely manner, incurring hundreds of thousands of dollars in interest. It's also grappling with putting Isaac Choi on leave after allegations of creating a hostile workplace. We start our show by recalling a dramatic day. Governor Josh Green asked the entire board of the HTA to submit courtesy resignations at the end of June. It was part of a restructuring from a semi-autonomous agency to an advisory board, moved back under the Department of Business and Economic Development and Tourism. We spoke with Board Chair Todd Apoe on the day he submitted his resignation. He said he wasn't sure whether the entire board would resign. Ultimately, they all did.
We got the request Thursday afternoon. And I haven't talked to anyone really about what their plans are. It's all an individual choice. It's not a board action. But I'll say everyone knew this was likely coming. I have not heard anyone say they were not going to resign. But again, I haven't talked to everyone, and not everyone was in the meeting to share a little bit of their mana'o. So I think we all, including the governor, just got to wait and see.
Okay. And I understand that the governor says that he may reappoint some people just simply because they just got on the board, you know, like yourself. Or we're also in this process of trying to select a permanent CEO. And from what I understand, there was a list of, 100 applicants for that position?
Yeah, you know, that happened before my time. I'm still a relatively new board member, and so don't understand all the details of the previous search that happened. But we've talked about using that experience to try to expedite the next step. But, you know, that is really going to be for the next board. And so I think there is value in having some board members continue to bring that connectivity to the next steps. But again, I think with the new law, it clearly put the responsibility in the governor's office. And so I certainly respect and probably agree with the, hey, let's start new. Let's wipe the slate clean, find the right group to help lead HTA into. I think there's a bunch of things that have to happen in the short term. And ultimately, we need to get to the long-term discussion of what should HTA be and how is it going to best serve Hawaii and tourism in Hawaii? And I know you had a little bit of that discussion with the governor last week, and I agree, we need to figure that out.
Well, you know, we're in a situation where you had people in key leadership roles leave the authority, and you've got interim folks in place. But I know there seems to be some concern by lawmakers, that folks might just be inexperienced, and it's really a difficult time. And there's just lots of pressure to fix what's broken, what some people see as broken?
Clearly, things need to get righted in a variety of ways, like you listed, from who's in leadership positions to the makeup of the board. And as we went through the past few months since knowing that what was SB 1571 was passed by the legislature, knowing that this evolution and next step was going to happen, it's hard to set long-term forward progress when you know that change is happening. So I think we need to get through this change quickly. So I appreciate the governor getting this out. I think they have a plan to try to get the new board named quickly. And that's what needs to really move forward, is deal with leadership positions. Who's there? Who can we find to fill the vacancies? And that's, again, part of that short-term fix that needs to happen for HTA.
Given that this board is moving from a policy board to an advisory board, it's, yeah, probably going to take a while before, you know, the lines are bright. But I don't know, what's the biggest challenge that you see just in this next month?
And whether it's in the next month or maybe, let's say, next 3 months, I think one of the biggest issues for HTA has been not having a permanent CEO leader. And that's gone on for 2 years. I came in and looking at the situation over the last 6 months, there were some reasons why, but that lack of permanent leadership, I think, really is the starting point for a lot of the issues that are being discussed and need to be dealt with. And so I've continued to push on the fact and talked about this with the legislators last Monday. That's really the priority for, let's call it now, this next board, that in the next month to 3 months, and hopefully within 4 months, a permanent CEO is selected. I think that's what brings stability. That's where someone can start articulating the vision, working with the governor's office, working with the legislators, because part of this is we need to get HTA figured out for a discussion at next year's leg session starting in January. And if we don't have that leader in quickly, it's going to be difficult to get through those discussions to a point of being ready for a leg opening in January.
Well, I'm scratching my head because I don't understand why, when you have interim leadership, that the process for certain things like procurement, what have you, that all that falls apart. And I just don't know if you don't have key people in positions that are familiar with the laws and, you know, how things are supposed to work. You know, it just seems like a lot of the concern about all the negative headlines in the news has to do with just procedures that weren't followed. So why does everything fall apart?
Yeah, and I'll tell you, from, I don't know. Again, being a relatively new board member, to tell you the truth, over the last 6 months, I've been trying to focus us on how do we fix, whether it's procurement issues or others, how do we fix them as opposed to going back and figuring out why they happened. And I understand we need to go back and figure that out because we want to make sure we're not repeating them. But at least my focus over the last few months has really been about making sure that we fix them. I mean, you've heard the discussion around how what happened in order to get both CNHA and HVCB caught up in their payments. To me, that was the most important first step, is making sure those things got done. And again, we need to get a leader, find the time to make sure, is it a lack of policy and procedure, or was it a failure to follow existing policy and procedure? And again, I don't know. You know, part of what I heard in some of the testimony that was shared last Monday was that probably where a number of those issues arose out of from a personnel side are those individuals or that group is no longer employed at HTA. So if it was that things just weren't followed, that policies that exist weren't followed, then maybe some of that's been solved. But I think to your point, to everyone's question, those things need to be figured out.
Yes, I mean, you know, lawmakers clearly were dismayed at some of the dysfunction, you know, hearing from the board members, longtime board members, and then also, you know, like yourself, who just stepped in and seemed to be caught in the crossfire about what's your kuleana exactly and how do we get out of this mess?
And I think it's that combination. We're a voluntary board, and I'm not able to be there. As a voluntary board member, I'm not sitting in the HTA offices on a daily basis at 8 hours a day. And so you rely on the team that's there, and it's a great team, but they're stretched. There are people in positions because of the vacancies that are filling multiple roles. And again, that's what needs to get solved. We need to fill those vacancies. We need to get the ship in the right position with the right crew so it can start performing as it should be. And I think it can. I have full confidence that HT has an authority with the individuals that are there and supplementing them with new hires can take care of business in the right way. We need to move on to those steps.
Do you plan to submit your courtesy resignation? And will you ask to come back if the governor reappoints you?
So I will be turning in my resignation. As I said, I believe that's completely within the governor's call. And I think it may be better someday to allow him to be able to require those. But it's a new step. I will resign. I'll have a conversation with governor and his team. Part of my, I've said to them a bit is, if I can help, I'm glad to help. But I'm also, it's a voluntary board. I don't want to just be spinning wheels and fighting headwinds. But if we're really trying to find and work towards solutions and we feel like we can get there together, I'm glad to see how I can help.
And the board is or has been talking about a strategic plan. They've been talking about a new governance plan. Any ideas just in the 6 months that you've been there as to where that goes?
Yeah, I think both the strategic plan and the other DMAP processing is in process to get going. Consultants are hired to help set a strategic plan. We need a new one. Our current strategic plan ends at the end of this year. If you put all the noise that's been going on aside, I think that strategic plan is another very important step for HTA. So certainly, and I'm pretty confident that this next board will focus on that with staff, because that strategic plan is really going to guide how we move forward. And when you look at HTA, our tourism overall in Hawaii, the community impact, the destination management that's being combined, this new strategic plan really needs to take what's happened within those areas over the past, up to even post-COVID, and develop a new strategy and plan for what we want tourism to be in Hawaii. And so I think it's a really important time to get through that new strategic plan for HTA.
Okay. Anything else that you want to underscore just from the last couple of weeks? Because it's been brutal.
Yeah. I mean, the last thing I'll say is the questions are the questions. They need to get solved both from a strategy and foundational aspect, but also from a daily operations aspect. But the big picture bottom line that I've said it's going to take time, but we need to get to it is, how does HTA best function in the long term? You know, it's easy to react to some of the issues and make what may be drastic changes in different directions. And I understand those need to happen to fix where we are now. But I also think everyone needs to step back and make sure we take a little bit more objective, long-term view of what's best for tourism and for Hawaii and our communities relative to tourism. And so sort of get out of a frenzy at some point and take a good, solid look at things. And both those things need to happen. It's going to take time to evolve through that.
Yeah, so just take a deep breath and then start anew July 1st and see how fast we can fix what's broken.
Yeah, yes.
Do you have any meetings set up with the governor this week?
Nothing set up at this point. I got to get my resignation in today, and we'll take next steps after that.
Okay. All right. Well, Tata Poe, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Great talking with you. Thanks so much, Catherine.
All right.
Aloha.
That was Tata Poe, who we talked to at the end of June on his last day as HTA board chair. Governor Josh Green had requested the courtesy resignations of the entire board. Today we're revisiting our recent coverage of the Hawaii Tourism Authority now that the agency is officially back under the Department of Business, Economic Development, and Tourism and is no longer a quasi-separate agency. It's enough change to make your head spin, and one of the ways leaders are making sense of HTA's future is by looking to its past. HTA became a separate entity in 1998 under Governor Ben Cayetano. The idea was born from a task force that he assembled to lift Hawaii's economy out of the doldrums. We talked to the governor earlier this month about those beginnings.
Maybe it was called the ERTF, Economic Recovery Task Force. And it was made up of people from business, labor, all the different parts of the community. And the idea of the HTA was born, and the focus or the purpose was to market Hawaii tourism in ways that were more purposeful and organized.
And those early days when you folks were trying to create the structure and the framework so that you'd get representation on that authority, what was the thinking?
I think an integral part of the thinking of the strategy was the marketing should not be pure marketing in a sense that you just put up a TV or radio ads and do it the way it was done in the past. The committee just strategized, and there's a lot of money involved, and we tried to keep the board of directors as objective as possible, which meant that the intent was not to load it up with people from the hotel industry, for example, or the airlines, but to have a more broad representation of people from the business community as well as the community at large. Unfortunately, over the years, it strayed from that purpose or that objective.
And there have been lots of criticism in recent years. The legislature tried to defund it because it wasn't really happy with the direction and thought there should be more management and less emphasis on the marketing.
I don't think it was less emphasis on marketing. It was finding ways to market more effectively and maybe more diversely. For example, one of the things that the HTA funded was, I think it was about $4 million for the movie Lilo and Stitch. And we were criticized for that. But the thought was that movie is going to be playing for 50 years. And if it advertises Hawaii, that's effective way to spend money. And what's happened, of course, is they're making a second remake of that movie. Been very, very successful. So for people who saw the movie all over the world, for $4 million, Hawaii was able to show itself, expose itself in terms of the scenery. And I think in the first movie, there was some caption or something that advised the viewers that this was being done, the funding from the HTA or the Visitors Bureau. That's the kind of marketing that was never done before. And it required a little thinking out of the box. And I think that's what we thought should be explored. We were very concerned about over-representation on the board by members of the hotel industry, for example, or the airlines. And soon what happened was, this always happens when there's a lot of money available, non-tourist people who were appointed to the board were all of a sudden being recruited by the hotels and the airlines and offered jobs. So that kind of got away from the objectivity that we had hoped to see on the board.
Given that we had so much vested in HTA and this structure and this model, do you agree with the governor's assessment that he needed to pull it back under DBED and state control?
Well, you know, there are two sides to that coin. On the governor's side, people voted for him. I'm sure he expressed his hope and aspirations for Hawaii tourism. And he told the people what he wanted to do. On the other side, you want diversity. But the way the board has been going now, I think that you find that it's been pretty much taken over by certain groups. And so I would, at this particular point, I would support that the control going to the governor. Now, having said that, the governor himself may be caving to pressure from the hotel industry or the special interest groups, which in my opinion are trying to control the HTA. But then people know exactly who to blame.
I think there are lots of calls for more transparency and accountability because we are talking about a big pot of money and our economic driver. But yeah, we'll just see how this plays out. and whether the governor can strike a balance with that board and how we market ourselves to the world.
Yeah, and I think that the marketing should touch on what we have to offer in terms of the sciences, the business, the university. Those are assets that people maybe are not aware of, because the marketing of Hawaii as being sand and sea and sun has been so dominant that they don't have a more accurate image of what Hawaii has to offer.
Any other final thoughts just about the time that we're in and going forward?
I thought that the Hawaii Visitors Bureau had done a good job marketing Hawaii. They had established branches in Tokyo, in Europe, that don't exist today. Marketing of tourism involves many things, but nothing like person-to-person type of contact to convince people or to sell Hawaii tourism to people in other countries. One last note. You know, what I'd like to see is the HTA make a direct plea to the Canadians to come to Hawaii. You know, none of the states have done that, and the nation has lost, I think, $12.5 billion so far in tourism dollars. I think that now people may be afraid of Trump. What the hell with that? Just go ahead and say to the Canadians, listen, we have differences with our president. We'd like you to come to Hawaii.
That was former Governor Ben Cayetano. His interview originally aired on July 1st. We'll look to the future of the Hawaii Tourism Authority coming up.
Support for HPR comes from the Honolulu Board of Water Supply, with a mission to provide fresh water to the people of Oahu, committed to conserving and protecting Oahu's water resources since 1929. BoardofWaterSupply.com.
Wetlegs Rhianne Teasdale thought the world already had enough love songs until she fell in love herself.
Love never comes to you when you're looking for it. It's always when you least expect it.
Rhianne talks about love and her more unconventional inspirations, and Wet Leg performs live on the next World Cafe.
Beginning this evening at 8, following Embodied.
You're tuned to member-supported Hawaii Public Radio. Streaming and more at hawaiipublicradio.org.
Welcome back to The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Catherine Cruz. If you're just joining us, we're re-airing our stories with decision makers about the upheaval at the Hawaii Tourism Authority, how tax dollars are being spent to market tourism in Hawaii. There's been a lot of finger-pointing about what is and isn't being done at HTA. Recently, we talked to Jimmy Tokioka, the director of the Department of Business, Economic Development, and Tourism, about the next steps. Not just to select a new board, but also a new chief executive officer, so work on our state's number one economic driver can get underway. A recent performance audit flagged problems with accountability. Who is and isn't eligible for freebies? Here's Tokioka on how the members of the new advisory board will get selected.
Two members, one that is picked by the Senate and one that is picked by the House, don't have to go through confirmation, but all other 10 will have to go through confirmation. We asked the Attorney General's office for an opinion because it's an advisory board. We didn't think that was necessary, but according to the Attorney General, the response that we got back or the opinion that we got back was they needed to go through Senate confirmation. So that's going to be the process. And the selection of the new 10 members, or the 10 members, I should say, because some of the members just got on the HTA board. So, you know, we're going to review some of those members and see if we're going to change them all out or keep them. And, you know, the House and the Senate, they can make choices to keep whoever they want because that's how the bill is set up. We'll have to have one from each county. We'll have to have members who have expertise in the areas of accommodations, transportation, retail, entertainment, and attractions, and one member that has expertise in Hawaiian cultural practices. So those are the guidelines via 201B. And so we will just make sure that that's followed when we make the selections. And it will be a collaboration between myself, the governor's office, and the governor. And, you know, I'm sure knowing the governor's management style that he will be taking input from members in the community on what they think is important. So whether DBED coordinates a blue ribbon committee or we have these conversations individually offline, that's how I understand the process is going to work.
How soon could we move on all of this? I mean, it's beginning of July. What's the time frame?
The time frame is I'm hoping to get all of these confirmations within the next week. I know how some of these things work. It might take a little longer than a week, but now that the board is an advisory board, the recommendations that I put forward was during session, the advisory board would meet every month during session, but in the off sessions, it would be every other month because now the committees won't be the same. The budget and finance committee doesn't approve the budget anymore. Some of the other committees that will be overseeing, whether it's sports tourism, whether it's CNHA's contract or Kilohana's contract, or HBCB's contract, they will be looking at those things and giving advice to DBED as we move forward on this process.
Well, I know that a priority is selecting a new CEO for the HTA.
Yes.
What's the timetable and what's the process going to be for that?
We have to have a board first because that's the biggest responsibility that the board has now. That does not come from DBED. The selection part does not come from the governor. But after the board selects a candidate, then the governor will approve the candidate, and that will be the pick. I don't believe that candidate has to go through Senate confirmation. I could be wrong, but I don't see it in the bill.
So theoretically, they could hit the ground running?
Yes.
What can you tell us about the previous process that was started before? Because I was told that like about 100 people you may have applied for that post, but I think the governor's weighed in on the salary, so things may have changed. And then obviously it's an advisory board now, not a quasi-agency anymore. So have we talked about how do we reach back out to those applicants?
Yes. So in last Thursday's meeting, I attended a part of it, and the discussion was whether or not we put out another contract with the vendor that did the committee search. And my recommendation was no, because we did get a list of candidates. I'm not sure that spending more money on that would produce any new names. But we will put out through media that we will be finalizing the applicants. So if there are other people that want to apply that haven't already applied, there still will be an opportunity for that. And then the search committee that was hired before, you know, their responsibility as part of the contract when they got it the first time would be to send names, and I think the board talked about 10 names for interviews to the board, and I think that's still going to be the same process. Once you get down past 10, you're not really looking at the candidates that really have the qualifications if you're down to the 10th person. So I think 10 is more than enough, and then the board would have to make that decision and move forward in the selection part of it. So that may take a little longer because, first of all, we got to confirm all of the board members. And then second of all, they would have to get together and figure out a process to select the new president and CEO.
What's your sense as to how this lawsuit will get worked out, you know, with Isaac Choi against HTA?
I've been advised not to talk about that. So there's an investigation going on. I don't know the details of the investigation, so I'm not even sure how long that's going to take, but that's all I can say for now.
And what can you tell us about the staffing of HTA? Are there a number of vacancies that need to be filled, you know, aside from the CEO?
If you include Isaac Choi, there's three other positions that need to be filled in the upper management area. But in the middle management area, I think most of the positions are filled. So, you know, everybody's moving along as best as they can. We're looking forward to the new person coming in and working with his team. I'm spending more time there on the day-to-day stuff, along with Caroline Anderson, who is the interim president and CEO, to make sure things don't fall through the cracks and that some of the initiatives that the legislature proposed get moving, because a lot of them were not completed and the legislature got frustrated. One example was the mobile app. It was passed 3 years ago and we didn't get an RFP completed within that time frame. So now we met with DAGS to ask for an extension on the encumbrance of the funds, and we're working with attorneys to figure out how the RFP is going to be worked out.
Share with our listeners what that mobile app would do. What's the purpose?
Oh, the purpose would be to help visitors when they come to Hawaii navigate different permitting systems between the state and the county. It would help our REID office, now that we're changing the ag form on the plains to just the NAG form and not the visitor information. We're trying to tie that together into the app, and also people who didn't get the mobile app on the plane getting data from them, because that's what businesses throughout the state rely on, is our visitor counts, where they're coming from, how long they're staying, and that's the type of information that would be inserted into the mobile app, helping us navigate the types of visitors that we get, the demographics, where they're coming from. All of that is important to us, because that's what's important to businesses when they come to the DBED website. And it makes me happy and it makes me proud that we have this site that businesses depend on for visitor information. So we need to make sure that they get right information so that they can manage their businesses with the appropriate and accurate information. Not everybody's going to fill it out on the digital form, but you just have to figure out how you capture data in the most efficient way and the most accurate way. And it's never going to be 100%, because people can choose still not to fill out the mobile app. But the mobile app that you're talking about will be a different set of things for the state to connect visitors to the best possible information that they can get on. Maybe some parks might be closed and they'll get it on the app. So we're working on how they sign up for the app, how they get it when they come here, whether we go to the airlines for help when they're flying here. They have 5 hours before they get here if they're coming from the West Coast, and longer than that if it's past that. So hopefully they can QR code it in to sign up for it, because that's the way that they're going to get information, and more information can be a positive thing for everybody who signs up on it. And so we're really excited about making this experience easier and better and seamless for the visitors when they come, and just having information on the attractions that are here in Hawaii.
Anything you want to say about the recent audits, the performance audits or the financial audits on HTA?
I have a lot of appreciation for Les Kondo. He's been great at his job. I will say that the information, he does his homework. I mean, his team, and I also know that he doesn't do all of the audits. He contracts it out, but he has to oversee it. He has to sign off on it. And so for me personally, I want us to be audited, because I want to know if we're missing things along the way. As a director, or even as the executive director of any department, they can't possibly know everything that's going on in every single agency that they have. So these audits help us figure out what we're doing right and what we're doing wrong. So I welcome his expertise. When he brought up the information about free use at the convention center, that was put out there. When he brings up things on different practices that we should be using, then we can sit down with him and have the discussion about, well, this is why we did it. He will share his advice on how we should do it going forward. And I don't think that's a bad thing. I think that's a good thing.
We do have the audits that highlight the the weaknesses in our systems and where we need to tighten up.
Yeah, and that's what they're supposed to do. As good managers, we need to figure out the things that we can correct and correct them and make sure that we learn from our mistakes so we don't do it again.
Is it your understanding that the policy for freebies, you know, will change going forward?
They already did, and they shouldn't have been the way they were. So now it has to be signed off by two people. And, you know, there are going to be times where somebody, a dignitary, the governor of a different country might come here. And there are times where we're going to give them free coffee and we're going to have snacks for them. But if there's other organizations, nonprofit organizations that come there, we need to really scrutinize whether it's something that is going to be a benefit to the taxpayers, first of all, and the organization. And that's the thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's the taxpayers that are watching this. And I know this from being a state representative and a county council member for 26 years. We need to make sure that people are overseeing our taxpayers' dollars. And, you know, the governor is very clear about that, too. Mm-hmm. We got to do what's right.
Anything else you want to underscore?
No, I am looking forward to working with the new group. I appreciate the work from the board that voluntarily resigned. I appreciate their support of Governor Green's request. And I look forward to working with the new board and doing the work for the people, making sure that our tourists are well taken care of and that the marketing of the state, that we get the best visitors to come to Hawaii. Everybody's working on that.
That was Jimmy Tokioka, director of the State Department of Business, Economic Development and Tourism. This is The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Catherine Cruz. Today's show has chronicled the overhaul of the Hawaii Tourism Authority, how in a matter of weeks, a semi-autonomous agency lost all its board members and now lives under the State Department of Business, Economic Development, and Tourism. We close our show with an industry voice. Keith Vieira, the former Starwood Resorts executive, is now with KV Associates, a tourism consulting firm. He shares his hopes and fears about what's ahead. Can the HTA find its way back, and what to do about marketing and management? Should we go back to using more of the hotel room tax, the transit accommodation tax, or TAT, to market the islands? And why can't there be better enforcement of illegal short-term rentals, or SDRs, in our neighborhoods? Here's Vieira.
It is a critical time, and there is hope that with change and with new people that maybe you'll get more creativity. Maybe the people will understand the importance of the visitor spending being the key measure, not number of visitors. Type of visitors are a crucial part because you want spenders. But hopefully there's recognition that if you want visitor spending, you have to market.
And so this new revamp of the Hawaii Tourism Authority, what are your hopes and what are your concerns?
On one hand, the previous one wasn't working, the infighting, because of the number of legislators that are on there and the political issues, which really held things back. So hopefully they're going to put people with knowledge, industry knowledge, business knowledge, community knowledge, not a lot of strong activists trying to look at what's in it for them or their group that they represent, and understand that Hawaii's got a very strong brand, still do. But we also have challenges on the horizon. It is a lot more expensive to come here and eat here and live here. We have global competition, which we never had because of the internet and going online and the different things you can buy. And we relied on wholesale distribution. Now it's online marketing, it's frequent travel programs. So how we spend our money has to change, but we have to spend money to get people here.
And we're at a point where we've got a soft summer coming up, and that makes people leery about how we're going to finish out 2025.
Yeah, I mean, for Hawaii, because we are basically a 93% leisure destination, nobody has to come here. They're not coming here for work. They can make a lot of different choices. And for us as a destination, it's about booking pace. We need to put X amount on the books 60 to 90 days out, X amount on the books at 90 to 120 days out. And pretty much looking what's coming on the books, you can tell what kind of year or what kind of season it's going to be. But when the summer runs empty and you're running specials to try to fill the summer, and I say run empty means softer than usual, it affects the fall and affects next year, first quarter. So unless we get ahead of ourselves, how do you possibly get your pace back? And then you compare that 20 years ago, we were spending $100 million in marketing, and today we're spending less than 30.
And then we've got a situation, too, where there's some animosity with the U.S. I know when we talked to Governor Ben Cayetano, he said we should be doing more to reach out to our Canadian friends. And I know the fall, the winter, is when we see the snowbirds. But what more can be done to boost our image when it's really taking a hit?
You got to get the message out there that Hawaii welcomes you. And we haven't had a welcoming message in a long time. We spent millions on Malama. If you come here, do the work and be conscious, and you should be conscious of the environment, but that's not an inviting message. So we have to go back to doing what we do well, which is our brand is a welcoming. Everybody hears, you travel anywhere in the world, and you say you're from Hawaii, Hawaii. It's a welcoming message. So we have to go back to that. And if we're not marketing at all, which is basically happening right now, we're arguing over $6 million. We should be arguing over $66 million. You're not going to get business, and it's going to come last minute like we're relying on now.
And we're in a situation, too, where the convention center is going to be shut down because of the repairs needed for the roof. And that's pretty unsettling because that's a couple of years, and those kinds of meetings need to be done way in advance.
Yes, that is unsettling, especially when people understand this is a state project. What happens on every state project? It gets delayed, and numerous reasons for the late finishing. So that's a concern because there's no way a meeting planner is going to book something. Oh, it will be done. Meeting planners cannot expose themselves like that. It's not a leisure traveler who 60 days out can say, we'll go to Cancun instead. Once they plan to come here, you cannot tell them, oh, by the way, our center's not working. Now, we can do more on the private industry side between the larger hotel groups, Hilton, Sheraton, et cetera, you can offset some of that. But no question, it has an effect on us. And for us, we've got to grow our group market, not shrink our group market.
Where do you see us going at this point? Because now we will have an advisory board, a new CEO. What are your hopes?
My hope is that somebody's going to understand at some point that the TAT is now $1.2 billion. That was done to fund marketing and that was done to fund the convention center. $1.2 billion that goes into the general fund. Why isn't some of that dedicated directly to tourism marketing? In my view, if you want to settle this and have an advisory board, all that great, but you need to dedicate 12 to 15% of the TAT to tourism marketing. I think that's the only answer that gives the stability that it's a multi-year, you can sign the Pro Bowl for 5 years because you know you've got the money for 5 years. Unless we do that, we're doing what we're doing right now, arguing over a couple of million dollars from where we can spend it in the fall.
So we're sweating the small stuff.
Yes. And people forget how important visitor spending is to us.
Maui is going through a tough time still, given what happened with the wildfires. And there were some mixed messages. Where do you see recovery in that area going?
Maui has unique challenges. West Maui, which is arguably the prime destination on Maui, and the impact of the area. And those of us that aren't physically there have no understanding of what those people went through, what the employees went through. And it was beyond devastating. And you look at the numbers for such a small area. But there's been pretty good recovery. There's just, again, you don't have any base. You have very little group base, and you still have a mixed message, and you don't have a marketing message. Where's the welcome to Maui? We want you back. Every time that is proposed, how are you going to fund it? And also, is it sensitive to everyone there? And arguably, there are people always going to feel that, no, we shouldn't have this. It should be a respected area. And you got to respect their beliefs or understand where they come from. But it's 1.2%. I think of the state population. It drives a lot of visitor spending, and people have great memories of Lahaina. So can we do something that's respectful, but also drives visitor spending? And I just drove through there last week, the amount of homes being built, so positive. But we have to still decide, what is it? What is the draw? Can we get that to be an artisan's village? Or can that be the place that people go to buy their art and show their art, and people can learn more about the culture and history of Hawaii through artisans?
A lot more work needs to be done.
Yes, and I understand it's going to be slow. In the meantime, the hotels are doing better, and hotels are not the key. Hotels will generally always find a way to make some money. It's the small mom-and-pop operators, the surf instructors, the restaurants. They get hit the most because if their business is 80% of what it used to be, they're losing money. They make their profit on the last 10, 15%.
And coming off the pandemic, we relied on the local residents to help shore up the industry, inviting them or urging them to go have a staycation to help the neighbor islands. I don't know, what more needs to be done to shore up the industry as a whole? I know we're seeing more
timeshare buildings being built, and that really helped our recovery during the pandemic. But yeah, but what else do you see on the landscape?
We have this unique challenge in front of us. 2009, 68,000 hotel rooms, condos, and timeshare. 6.3 million visitors. 2019, 68,000, actually a little less, but basically 68,000 hotels, condo, and timeshare, 10.4 million visitors. So those last 4 million visitors and a number of previous ones were all staying basically in STRs. And we all like STRs, a lot of us travel with them, but anytime you take up resident housing, that's not a good thing. If you have a condo in Waikiki and you've rented out to visitors, people understand that, that's logical. But if you have 5 condos in Kaneohe and you're trying to get them with Airbnb to get short-term rentals because it's profitable, then that's wrong. You shouldn't be allowed to do that. Or if we're going to allow people to do this, then you should pay the same taxes that hotels do. They should be forced to follow the same safety measures that hotels do. But then you have a real hit on what happens to residents and where do they live. So that equation has to be solved. The industry has always supported hosted short-term rentals. And my view, if you're in a residential area like Wailea or Waikiki, you should be able to do it. But if you're in typical residential areas that don't have visitor services, you shouldn't be allowed to do it.
So there needs to be more of a crackdown on those in the neighborhoods, even though they have started and all the counties are working through regulations. But do you think the enforcement is key?
Yeah, I think the enforcement is key because these visitors, and again, we've all been some of them sometime, don't spend the money the way the other visitors do. They're not out dining in the restaurants every night. They're not out playing golf or taking surf instructions. They're hiking, biking, and doing things like that, which is logical. But we need to drive visitors who spend money.
Gosh, I don't know. Anything else about from where you sit and what you hope doesn't happen?
Previous to the pandemic, we had airline strikes. We had hurricanes in 82 and 92. You had 9/11. And the state, including industry and businesses, immediately pulled people together. And I think Ben Cayetano, I remember 2 days after 9/11 being in his office with Waimanalo service station owners. And they were saying, we didn't realize that half of our business was tourists filling up the gas, driving around the island. So Ben pulled us together, got us on a trip to Japan and went to invite people back. And we need that kind of leadership where people understand that visitors and the distribution system that drives visitors, wholesale, et cetera, need to feel that they're welcome back and that we want their people here. And you can do that through marketing dollars. And when the state spends marketing dollars, industry spends marketing dollars following it. Because when you say come to Hawaii, the industry wants to say stay at my place. So then you have a integrated campaign of a co-op funding. My hope is that we start co-op funding again and we start putting the necessary dollars in the market, which is over $100 million a year.
So it's leveraging that money.
Yeah.
Before Hawaii Tourism Authority was the quasi-agency and set up as Ben did in those days, it was under DBED, it was attached to DBED, and talking to people, they were saying a lot of lawmakers were trying to pull strings and put their pet projects in. I don't know, are you concerned about that?
Always concerned about that. But prior to HTA, we used to, part of industry businesses, would go at HVCB down to the legislature every year, hat in hand, trying to get money for the following year. When Cayetano pulled together the economic advisory board of business, there was a clear mix of people across all industry in Hawaii. They came to the conclusion that you need to have dedicated funding. It was crucial. And henceforth, the industry supported the TAT, and I think it was 4 or 5% back then, and supported it because they recognized we need to have dedicated funding. Today, we have the highest TAT in the world, and none of it is dedicated funding. That's our challenge with dealing with legislators. They all want the money grab, and they're not willing to invest into the business that drives the revenue.
If you had one message for the governor and the administration with this revamp or reboot of HTA, what would that be?
Put on visionary, creative people, not former legislators. Put people who have had successful businesses and understand that you have to invest to drive revenue, and also understanding the importance of how it's done, but it needs to be done now.
Any other destination that we should look toward and model?
They did that study last year with, I guess, Visit California, whatever it was called, and destination management, the side of how it's funded, and it kept out the legislators. I think that needs to be done. They need to keep legislators out of what goes on in terms of marketing. They can have input on the quality of the product. They can have input on a lot of things affecting their area, but stay out of the marketing.
That was Keith Vieira of KV Associates, a tourism consulting firm, talking to us earlier this week about the state of our visitor industry and the revamp of the Hawaii Tourism Authority. Does it for today's Hawaii Tourism Authority Hanaho Show. We have to go now, but next week we hope to continue turning the stone over. We'd like to hear from you. Call our talkback line and leave your comments. Here's that number, 808-792-8217. You can also email us at talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org or find us on Instagram at @wearehpr. Listen back to our show on the conversation page, HawaiiPublicRadio.org. Our program is produced by Maddie Bender, Lillian Song, and D.W. Gibson, with support from Savannah Harriman Pote and the HPR Digital Team. Our intern is Laura Dukes. The Beckard Quiz theme was written for us by John DeMello. Theme music courtesy of Gypsy 808. I'm Catherine Cruz. Join us on Monday. Pick up the conversation.